Diamondbacks All Access Week with Doug and Wolf. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
So normally in All Access Week, the Doug and Wolf Show live from right out front of Salt River Fields. Players walking by saying hi that know us. Players that don't know us just stare at us, or why are these two weirdos hiding under heaters because they're cold when it's 70 degrees, but really it started the morning at 40 degrees. And that's the story of All Access Week. And one of the newer Diamondbacks, Trace Thompson, has just called in on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. And point blank, I don't know how this is going to go, because when you're – this is Phoenix. And when your dad's a Laker, your brother's a Warrior, and you probably grew up as a Dodger fan, this could get ugly. That's how I'm a little worried.
And you actually know a former teammate of mine.
Oh, no way.
This is going to be
really
interesting.
Now, I don't know that story. Trace, good morning. Are you ready to raise your right hand and declare allegiance to the Suns, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, and Coyotes?
I do have a Cardinals connection.
Okay.
Ooh, what is
okay.
that? What is that?
I grew up with Neil Lomax and the Lomax family, and Jack, his middle son, was one of my very close friends growing up. So I'm behind the Cardinals bandwagon.
All right.
This is my second year with the Diamondbacks. The Suns, hey, I don't really watch a whole lot of basketball, contrary to what everyone probably thinks. But, I don't know about that one.
Trace, so once again, go back with Jack Lomax. Where was that? You guys grew up together? Like, did you live close to him?
Yeah, so we grew up in Oregon. We grew up in Portland. That's where my mom's from. My dad, started his career there, and that's where Neil's from. And so they literally just lived down the street from us, when we were kids. And so, we grew up playing. I personally grew up playing every sport with Jack. Jack was my teammate in basketball and baseball. We played against each other in football, though. Neil never got me on his team for some reason. I'm still bitter about it. But and then his oldest son, Nick, was my big brother's age. So, they grew up together. So we've known them forever. They're great people. And I'll forever be a Lomax fan.
So, as will I, my brother.
Just so you know, Wolf is so old that he played with Neil Lomax. So so it's funny you talk about a guy that because of his dad. Well, there you go.
Yeah, Neil's older than I am.
Oh, nice save, though. Nice save. Trace, I don't know if a lot of fans know this, so I'm gonna give them a rundown. Bristol, Great Falls, Kannapolis, Charlotte, Birmingham, Winston-Salem, Salt River, Birmingham, White Sox, Charlotte, Dodgers, Oklahoma City, Oakland, White Sox, Charlotte, Columbus. Do you love the game, you think, more than a kid that's just walking in now that's in his first or second year after what you've been through and yet you're still here fighting?
Yeah, I feel like the, kids nowadays or young guys nowadays, it makes me feel really old saying that, but young guys coming into the game nowadays, you see prospects, the premium put on prospects is, it's higher than it's ever been. And these young prospects are so well known by the fans that it almost feels like I'm not saying any of them are entitled, but you almost get a sense that they feel like they should be in the big leagues a lot quicker than, most guys, which is fine. You want your guys to be in the big leagues, but, when I was coming up, it was just known that you have to work your way up. And like, that was just, that was the standard, and guys move quickly. I had a few setbacks. I got hurt my first year, but, guys definitely moved quickly when I was coming up. But, you have to love it, man. You definitely have to love it to endure, through the minor leagues. But just because you have one good minor league season doesn't mean you're going to be a good big leaguer. You have to do it year in and year out.
Trace, give us a scouting report on yourself. What do you think are your strengths?
I try to be the most complete player I can be. I feel like I physically can, impact every facet of the game, whether it's defense or base running or offense. I feel like I was with this team last year and with these guys last year, at the alternate site, obviously, and back and forth with the big league club traveling with them. But so these guys know what I'm capable of. They saw me in LA. I feel like I can impact the game. I can make a big impact offensively. I feel like I was kind of on my way doing that when I was in LA. I had a setback with a back injury, and ever since then, I've kind of just been trying to regain my form. I feel like I'm in a good spot. I'm ready to go.
Trace Thompson joining Doug and Wolf, Diamondbacks outfielder. And don't call him a kid, 29 years old, even though he probably wants you to call him a kid. But, Trace, I liked what you said there about the minors because of your journey. I mean, I'm sure as a second-round pick, you felt the expectations, and because of some of the injuries, you didn't reach the expectations other people put on you. I don't know if anybody gave you the horrible tag bust. You fought through it, and you're here, and I know people in the Diamondbacks organization that expect things from you this year in a positive way. I mean, you're going to contribute, and that's what's expected. How's that? Do you impart that knowledge on those young guys, or how valuable are you on this journey to guys that are 10 years younger than you?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Being at the alternate site last year, I got a chance to play with Alec Thomas, and Alec's dad was my strength coach with the White Sox, so I've known Alec since he was, you know, 12 years old. So it was kind of a full circle moment for me. But, you know, I just try to go out and be myself and really just, you know, be me. And if young guys recognize, you know, how I go about my work, you know, I got a chance to learn from some really, really awesome role models when I was coming up. And, you know, I had, you know, with the White Sox, Jose Abreu, you know, even though he was still young in the league when I first got to the big leagues, it was only his second year when I first got there. He was older. He was a Cuban guy. He was a little bit older, but this guy went about his work as professional as you can get. I had Adam LaRoche was my locker mate. Paul Konerko obviously set the standard there forever. But then, obviously, you know, playing in LA, I played with so many, you know, great, fantastic, established big leaguers. And so I feel like you just kind of learn by watching the guys. You almost learn more by the guys that don't say a whole lot and just kind of go about their business. And I feel like I just try to take that mold. And, you know, being with those young guys last year, I just tried to, you know, play my game. You know, they were my teammates at the end of the day. So I just try to play my game and treat them like my teammates. And if they learn from me, awesome. But at the end of the day, we're all the same.
So, Trace, Clay Thompson is your brother?
Yeah, my little brother.
He's your little brother. Okay, that is awesome right there. What have you learned? What have you been able to take away from Clay, your brother?
Well, Clay, you know, he was a year older than me, so we did everything together. We're only 13 months apart, so, you know, growing up, we did everything together. And then I was actually drafted, you know, out of high school while he was in college, so I was technically the first professional, you know, athlete child in the family. But no, Clay, you know, his demeanor is something that, you know, you hear all these, you know, sports psychologists talk and stuff, and, you know, I've bounced around so many teams that I've heard a lot of people talk about it. But I think about Clay's mentality and his headspace and his like approach to just playing the game, and that's what makes him so elite. And that's something that I really try to, you know, really try to dial in on when I watch him or when I talk to him. But I mean, he's my brother. You know, at the end of the day, he's not Clay Thompson to me. He's just Clay, my brother.
Right.
So it's hard to say I've learned a whole lot from him. I just enjoy watching him so much. It's one of my favorite things to do in my life. And, but his mentality, man, it really sets him apart.
Game-winning shot. Clay Thompson or Devin Booker?
Whoever's open.
That was impressive. You are a pro. That was
good,
very,
right? Listen,
very impressive.
I've got to ask you this. I've got your website up right now. I've got your picture on the Diamondbacks website here. It says nickname Rocco's uncle. What example? What is that, Trace?
Well, that was like the first Players Weekend back in 2017. Rocco is Clay's dog, and he's kind of become the family dog. And I'm sure if you go on Clay's Instagram or if you just look up Clay, you'll see Rocco in there somewhere.
That's pretty classic. Clay, a more serious question. Look through
Trace.
You got me thinking of Clay's dog, and I said Clay. Trace, when you look back through all the organizations you've touched, even all of the cities, what do the Diamondbacks do right? As an organization, what is it that you saw at Salt River last year, this year, that you say this is something that this organization's got right?
Well, you know, I first really saw it. Well, actually, you know, coming up with the White Sox, we got to play against these guys in AA. You know, Nick Ahmed, Jake Lamb, Archie Bradley, you know, Ender Inciarte, David Peralta. I got to see all these guys, you know, coming through the minor leagues.
So that's you're in Birmingham and they're in Mobile, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they were, I mean, they had such a great team. You know, and then once I got traded to the Dodgers, you know, they just did everything all the little things they did right, which made them so competitive. You know, you think about the Dodgers, you know, the Giants obviously had their run, but you think about the Dodgers and how talented they are and, you know, their resources and, you know, their ability to be able to get guys, you know, that command a high payroll. You know, the Diamondbacks don't spend that type of money, but they still find a way to compete, and it's because they take care of business on the baseball field. And you always appreciated the little things that they did well, you know, running the bases, playing, you know, solid sound defense and grinding out at bat. So, you know, being on the other side, I always recognize that. And then coming over here and being with, you know, with Torrey, obviously, but being with Dave McKay, you know, rest of the coaching staff, like it's impressive, man. But that's, you know, that's something that I feel like, you know, people aren't really thinking a whole lot about us. But, you know, this team does everything, all the little things well, and the DNA of this team is, you know, ready to compete. So I think everybody's pretty excited.
Trace, do you allow yourself to think of what you might do when you're done playing baseball? Do you want to get into baseball somehow? Do you want to coach?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I remember when I first got to the big leagues, people would always ask me that. I'm like, man, I'm just getting started. But, you know, I do think about that. You know, I feel like, you know, I do love the game. I don't know exactly what, you know, if I stayed in the game, exactly what I would do. You know, I love, you know, Daryl Boston, who's the first base coach for the White Sox. He was my outfield rover when I was coming up, and he had a huge impact on my career and helped me tremendously. And so that's something that I would always, you know, look to do. But as far as that, you know, I always want to give back. You know, my dad's from the Bahamas, and baseball's kind of blowing up in the Bahamas, so I would love to do stuff down there as well.
That's cool.
And then we grew up in Oregon, obviously, in Portland, and baseball, you know, that has some talent, but has a whole lot of untapped talent. And so that's there. I would love to do stuff up there as well.
Trace, we enjoyed it. Yeah. Thanks awesome, for giving us your time. And you're the type of guy where these are great baseball stories, and they don't get told a lot. So thanks for keep fighting and representing the way you do. Good luck this year.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Hey, Rocco.
There's Trace Thompson. It's Rocco's uncle.
Rocco's the uncle.
Dog. Yeah.
You got to be kidding me.
Of course, I can't call you out after calling him his brother. Trace Thompson joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. If you're in the market for a new or pre-owned Nissan, just go to coulternissan.com, west of the hassle. Coming up next, D-Book is an all-star. Kind of. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf's The One. The number one story of the day.
We're at least at the point where the Suns are so good that if they lay an egg, we immediately apply it to the next game and say, okay, here's what you've got coming up next. What are you going to do about it? And that's the situation for the Phoenix Suns as they're on the road now, going to take on Chicago and Minnesota over the weekend. And two teams where I think we would all agree they're not intimidating teams by any stretch of the imagination. The Eastern Conference is the typical Eastern Conference. Chicago's a game below 500. And they're the sixth seed.
Yeah.
The typical East. And then, of course, every year Minnesota's rock bottom. And they're sitting at 7-26, last place, and a new coach. So
totally amazing.
These two teams aren't good enough to beat the Suns if they both play to the level that's expected. But last night was one of those games where the Suns played to the level that is expected for a while. And then they didn't. And fell on their face.
This is one of those deals, basically. You have to own it, right? You have to own it as an individual, as a player. You also have to own it as a team right now. It's one of these games you can get better. It's a great reminder. I think the Brooklyn Nets game was a great reminder as well. No Kevin Durant, no Kyrie Irving. James Harden went off, and they had a big lead in that game as well. This is something that has been repeated over and over throughout this season. Now, again, we're talking about a team that was 20-10, absolutely on fire, 12-2 in their last 14 games going into last night's game. But it's just a great reminder of how difficult it is to win. If you don't go out there with the right mindset, if you don't go out there with the ability to put your intensity on the line and go out and match the other teams, you're going to lose And I think it's a great reminder of what it takes to win in the NBA. And that's not a bad thing, ultimately. It can actually have long-term impacts that are positive.
One of the real interesting aspects of this game is how palpable the Suns' anger is about Devin Booker's All-Star snub. Yet, I don't think it moves into category of distraction. I don't think they lost to Charlotte because of anything to do with the All-Star snub at all.
I don't either.
It was defense in the second quarter. It was the bench. I'm not blaming the officials. You've got to be mentally tough enough to overcome it. But the officials were a disaster, and it really created problems throughout the game, especially with D-Book's foul trouble. But you could tell, start with Monty Williams' comments at the beginning of the week. Book's an All-Star. End of story. He's an All-Star. End of story. And yet Western Conference coaches disagree with you, Monty. They say your guy is not better than the other guards or Zion Williamson. And then Chris Paul beforehand kind of doubled down. How often do you hear a Hall of Famer say, I'm here for him, when you're the one that's going to the Hall of Fame?
Book going to be fine. Book is going to be fine. Mont said it this morning, and it's true for me too. I came here because of Book. You know what I mean? Don't make any mistake about that. Like, I came to Phoenix because of Book, you know, and it's because of who Book is and the way that he plays and the way, like, he channels his energy and whatnot. So Book already plays with a chip on his shoulder. So, yeah, we good over here.
Wow.
That's some high praise right there from Chris Paul. You can almost hear the love in that right there, the love and respect that you'll have for your teammate. It's an amazing thing when you go out there and you compete at the highest level our species can generate. So much of the time there's hardship that is involved with that. There's difficulty that is involved with that. There's adversity that is involved with that. And so much of the time, whenever you do that, whenever you're faced with that difficulty, that adversity, it bonds people together, does it not? It joins people. And I think this is something that is growing and continuing, has been growing over the last few months, but you can see this rapport between CP3 and Devin Booker, and this is something that's going to really pay some great dividends, I think, in a couple more months.
Eddie Johnson has mentioned it quite a few times, the Fox Sports Arizona analyst, of Devin Booker is built differently. Tom Chambers said that exact thing, same thing to us recently, in which he soaks up everything from knowledgeable veterans, knowledgeable basketball people, because he has an incredible desire, A, to learn due to his love of the game, and B, it's also attributed to the competitive fire of, I want to destroy you. I want you to lose at based on what I do. So if someone can teach me more about the game to help me beat you, I can't wait to get it. And it's interesting to me because there's still a faction of people, and some of them are intelligent within the NBA, and some of them are fans, and I don't know if they're intelligent, that are still arguing Devin Booker isn't all that. And just think of what the great phrase from Eddie Johnson, you make the last second shot in the bubble over Paul George and over one of the great defenders in the game, Kawhi Leonard, and he says, if you didn't know, now you know.
Yeah.
You've got Monty Williams arguing that he's an All-Star end of story, but he also declared that I came here because people need to know who you are. Now you've got a Hall of Famer in Chris Paul saying, I'm here because of D-Book.
No, at the end of the day, we control what we can control. You know what I mean? We talk about everything as a team. Me and Book have a really close relationship. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, we'll worry about what we can control.
It's just a weird situation. What can you control right here? I thought Devin Booker's game, for the most part, he scored 16 in the first quarter. 16 in the first quarter. Looked like, here we go.
Here we go.
He's done that the last few games. 16 in the first quarter, 3 in the second quarter. He got in foul trouble early in the third quarter, then got into a chirp fest with a Hornets bench in the fourth quarter, got teed up, and that seemed to mess with him a little bit. And it looked like he was suddenly trying too hard. And I think the technical messed him up, as I said, a little bit. And then he was fire at the end of the game. It was just this inconsistent Devin Booker up and down. And I wonder if, in fact, all this All-Star melancholy had some type of effect on him.
I think you need to go deeper on the technical. I totally believe that was the salt in the wound, the insult to injury. He knows, and it's not fair that it's this way, but it's the truth. Since the referees of the NBA play favorites to the stars, there's no way a star gets that technical. None whatsoever. I mean, do you really think Giannis is getting a technical for dunking and for yapping back at the bench who's been yapping at him all game? Do you think LeBron is getting a technical? Do you think Chris Paul would get a technical? Look at the greats of the game right now. The answer is absolutely not. So when you say you think the technical mess with him, I not only agree 110% because you can always give more. I agree. I agree to the point of I think it feeds into the argument that his anger is I am disrespected, and now it's affected the game.
Yes,
it's when it's off the court, it's like okay, whatever. I'm mad about it, but I'll get over it. This was disrespect by an official in the game, and it cost him.
One of the things you can never forget, Basinonians, is the fact that the Hornets were chirping at him all game. Why do you think that was?
You know that they're saying you're not an all-star. Where's it at, all-star?
Why would you do that? Because there are two types of athletes in the world, those that you pick at and those that you do not.
Normally Devin's in the latter.
And isn't it interesting that the Hornets chose to pick? Maybe they knew, hey, we can get him off his game. We can get him off his game right now, especially because of the melancholy that he's feeling. That, to me, was one of the big eyebrow raisers of that game, was the fact they were picking at him. Interesting.
Alert, alert. We have a new mock draft. I repeat, we have a new mock draft.
I'm never going to get used to that, ever.
We'll get used to Mel Kiper Jr. next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The NFL Draft. News on number 16. Draft coverage. Live, local, late breaking.
Oh,
Mel Kiper Jr.
Mel.
Mock Draft 2.0. And it's historic, by the way, with the 16th pick in the 2021 NFL Mock Draft. The Arizona Cardinals select, oh yeah, J.C. Horn, cornerback, South Carolina.
Draft news you can use with Doug and Wolf.
Did you notice I said...
That's it? That's the song? Draft news you can use with Doug and Wolf.
Yeah, this is the credits rolling, Wolf.
Now we return you to regular programming. Already in progress.
Something like that.
Those will come. Those will come.
All right, that's interesting right there. How would you feel about
that? The best
that,
I can do is... I don't really have anything else.
Yeah, right. How would you feel about that, Basinonians? A cornerback, J.C. Horn, at number 16.
Amen.
Would you say cornerback is a position of need for the Arizona Cardinals? I would say there's
yes.
No doubt about it. Is there somebody worthy at number 16? Is there somebody on a tier at number 16 where you look at it and you say, man, corner is really an important position for us, and it's an important position for any franchise in the NFL, and there's a guy that's worthy of being the number 16 pick. We're going to take that guy, J.C. Horn. I'd be all over that. I endorse that message 100%. Especially if he came back in the second round and there was somebody that was worthy. Somebody, he's got to be worthy. You can't reach. But somebody that was worthy at pick number 49 on the interior offensive line, like a center or a guard.
Vera Tucker is the guard out of USC.
I'll take Vera Tucker.
That a lot of people say is a solid pick in the low teens.
Yes.
So you get him in the middle teens at 16. There's people that that would be all over that. For me, I think J.C. Horn is the second best corner in the draft. I do think Patrick Surtain is number one. I just don't think there's any chance he's still there at 16. That's why you hear me trump a lot about J.C. Horn. Like, you know, a long time ago with the Suns, I didn't talk much about Kawhi Leonard because I thought there's no way in the world there's people that stupid in the NBA that wouldn't draft him. Mm. And, oh, my gosh, he's there. This is great. Oh, no, let's go get a Morris twin. So it depends on how you rank the guys based on where you think they're going to be. But this is – I do consider this a big deal, what happened today in the mock draft. And I mean actual news with Mel Kiper's mock draft. I'll have to ask Mel, but I think – he's been doing it for 35 years. Okay.
35 is the number.
He broke his own rule this year.
Oh, so let's see.
And he has two rules, and he broke one of them.
Okay, so he drafted a running back in the first round?
No, he did not.
Oh, okay.
But you're right. That is rule number one. Don't take running backs in the first round. No. Now, he will sometimes do it in his mock draft because he thinks that team will.
Okay, I see.
His other rule, you can never have trades in a mock draft. This is the first ever Mel Kiper mock with trades.
Why would he do that? Why would he?
He broke his own rule. He believes it is just too guaranteed this year there's going to be a ton of movement up and down the board.
Oh, man.
That he felt the need that he had to do it. And the reason why it's interesting.
Well, that makes him 0-2 on his rules.
The reason why it's really interesting.
And I love Mel Bacinotti.
Is because the team he has making a trade is the 49ers to move up and draft Justin Fields.
Move up where?
To number seven in a deal with Detroit.
Wow.
Saying Justin. Detroit's going to live with Goff, and then they want to accumulate picks. San Francisco has them. So it's his belief they're not in the Deshaun Watson race necessarily, but they want to have Jimmy G as their guy, but they want to be able to have a little bit of leverage and have a little bit of competition and kind of push the envelope a little bit.
Interesting right there. If they moved up to number seven to draft Justin Fields, how many quarterbacks have gone before that? Obviously, Trevor Lawrence. I'm sure he's got Trevor Lawrence going number one overall, correct?
He has Trevor Lawrence going number one overall.
So are there any other quarterbacks that he put in front of Justin Fields?
He says the first trade of the draft are the Atlanta Falcons. And the Falcons are currently drafting at, I believe, number nine. I'd have to cheat and look it up, to be quite honest. But he has the Falcons moving up to number two and making a move with the Jets and drafting Zach Wilson. So he's got that at number two. So he goes that very quickly. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson at two. Then, remember how we started talking about Kyle Pitts possibly being there for the Cardinals?
Yes.
The great tight end out of Florida? He's going to the Jets at four.
Okay.
So I was wrong. Atlanta's drafting at four. So they move up to two, get a quarterback. Jets draft Kyle Pitts. And then he's got a quarterback in Justin Fields at seven. Carolina goes Mac Jones at eight. Patriots trade up with Denver. Which I kind of disagree with him on this because I like Drew Lock.
Yeah.
I don't think the Broncos do.
Yeah.
And if the Broncos, this is my opinion. And I think
that's a good way to go, Douglas.
If the Broncos are sitting there at nine with the quarterback out of North Dakota State on the board, Trey Lance, aren't they going to take him? And he says the Patriots will give them enough to move up and take Trey Lance. And then those are all of the quarterbacks he's got taken in order for the Cardinals to get what should be the 11th best player in the draft position.
Yeah, once again, Mel also believes that you should never draft a running back in the first round.
You're right.
I just totally disagree with that, honestly. There are exceptions to every rule. I totally understand the spirit of that rule, but to follow it to the letter of the law would be ridiculous. If, in fact, you had a guy that was an absolute freak, Earl Campbell, by way of example, ladies and gentlemen, right now, Earl Campbell. I know, my young crunk brothers, there's a lot of you out there that don't know who Earl Campbell is or was. Google it.
You will say, look at this guy if you YouTube it. You'll show it to a friend.
I am telling you right now, he brutalized people savagely in the NFL.
I like
speed, an unbelievable, just a freak of nature. And I say that with full affection for Earl. And if you find a guy like that, of course, I'm going to draft him in the first round. Somebody that is that much of an exception at his position, especially running back.
I like the rule from the standpoint of the main point isn't about the guy you are drafting, is that there's just too many good running backs every year that are later get that guy.
To say that there aren't freaks of nature at every position is ridiculous.
However, I admit, if the Cardinals drafted Najee Harris at 16, I'm okay.
I'm just saying.
I admit, I'm okay.
I don't know if I'm okay with Najee Harris at number 16. I don't think he's Earl Campbell.
Not over J.C. Horn, but I'm okay with it. By the way.
Wolf's Playbook for Dummies. Press man.
Man cover where a cornerback walks up over the wide receiver and jams him.
I love the way you said that, Mel.
And jams him.
Like, what are you going to do about it?
Why do you need to know about Press Man? Meet J.C. Horn.
Most definitely. I feel like, you know, Press Man is my strong suit. No, that's what I hang my hat on, Press Man, being physical, and, you know, just having a good knowledge and feel for the game. So me being in Press Man 90% of the time, I love that. But, you know, I feel like I also can play, you know, multiple coverages. Like I said, just being a versatile guy. You put me in a nickel in a run game. I did that most of my freshman year. You can put me as safety. I can control the defense. I got reps at that. And then that corner, cover two, cover three, whatever we playing, you know, I feel like I have, you know, the mentality and the body type and all the athletic ability to do whatever a team need me to do. But if I could choose, I want to play Press Man the whole game.
First of all, his voice is awesome, is it not? I mean, that is just so. What are you doing, JC? What are you doing? Are you a screamer out on the field? Is that? I absolutely love that, number one. And
of course you
His
would.
Voice actually sounds like how he played. He's a tough dude.
6'1", about 205, 210.
Good tackler. A guy that can play that cover two corner where any type of flow on the perimeter, any type of action, any type of play that comes at you, you got to force that. Back inside, you got to be tough to play that if you're going to play a lot of cover two. You got to have those kind of corners, and they have to be able to tackle as well. This guy is tough, and because of that, oh, man, he can do it all, too. Press man, man off, cover two, cover three, as you heard him say right there. This guy would be fine if the Cardinals drafted him at number 16.
You know who's really good at press man right now? Derek Hall's wondering when you're done.
Oh, sorry, D.
Okay.
That was bad.
Our first weekly visit of the year, Derek Hall, president, CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Spring training sold out already. Now, how about the regular season? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Madam Speaker, the president.
It looks like she went to shake his hand, and he did not take it.
The president.
He's the president and CEO of your Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hail to the chief.
Derek Hall.
The president.
On Now with Doug and Wolf. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business Internet keeps you connected with 99.9% reliability. Visit coxbusiness.com for details.
Good morning, Mr. President. Who is the last person that you shook hands with?
Well, you know, I was out at the facility yesterday, and we did a lot of elbow pumps, which was even too close for me. It's still too close for me.
That's why I asked.
Hey, exactly. You know me. I didn't like handshakes before before the pandemic. So you can imagine now. And good morning. I was thinking, could this be? This is our 15th year of this weekly segment. I think 15.
Oh yes, my goodness!
Yeah, that's unbelievable. That. Yeah, I think we started in 2007, and here we are, 15 years later, doing this.
Absolutely. True. It's not 14 years, as Doug Lease likes to say. It's
15. We've had our 14th anniversary. Seasons. We're in year 15.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I've been with you all along. It's great.
So, D, talk to us right now about the status. You've sold out all of spring training. That's got to feel pretty good right there.
Yeah,
right?
Before we get too excited about selling out spring training, we have to realize 2,200 fans. that's right. What's allowed right now at Salt River. I think all the facilities did a nice job of making sure that we were distanced according to, you know, health code now and what the recommendations are. And if there's a chance for us to expand that, we will. But, you know, everyone's going to be able to come to the ballparks and feel very safe and confident and be in their health and safety pods, whether it's 2, 4, 6. It's spaced out really nice. It's cashless. It's contactless. We've been ready for this with our playbook. It's going to be nice to see fans there, of course, after playing last year without fans. But it's exciting to know that we're going to have them. We've been watching the other sports. Obviously, we've been watching the hockey and the NBA. And I think we've talked about it. You've talked about it on your show. The NFL did such a terrific job with, you know, between 1 and 2 million fans over 18 weeks and not to have an outbreak. We also do know that I think it's close to 20 times greater protection if you're outdoors against the infection. So it's something we're all looking forward to and keeping it under control.
We're talking to Derek Hall, president, CEO, Arizona Diamondbacks. What in the process of selling out, though, in 24 hours with your pod system, What did you learn? I mean, is it something you can just pick up and drop right into the regular season and be able to pull off the same thing?
We absolutely can. And what we learned is there's obviously huge demand for people to get back to watch sporting events. We've seen that with the other sports as well. But, you know, baseball, as you know, it's always such a huge draw in spring, and especially at Salt River Fields where we're used to 15,000 fans. So it's going to be odd to have 2,200. But again, we have to see how that goes, and we'll take that same application towards Chase Field. And we haven't received any sort of approval yet. We haven't even submitted our plans, but we've got lots of plans. I mean, we could see keeping it very safe and similar to what we're doing at Salt River if we were at 50%. Or, you know, we've seen how most teams are targeting opening day around 30%. We're not sure what that number is going to be. We're going to continue to work with the local jurisdiction, as every team will, to make sure that we get the proper approval. But then hopefully as more of these numbers continue to go down, we're seeing the decline, which is so good. We're seeing more people get the vaccination. Obviously, with that rate going down and the hospitalizations going down, we're going to be able to increase the number of fans at all events. And that's going to be very, very impressive. Boy, and happy for a happy time for all of us. But impressive in the fact that we can do it very safely, confidently, and universally.
You know, just listening to you, D, talk about all the uncertainty that you're faced with right here, I would imagine that's wreaking havoc on season ticket sales, right?
And Wolf, I think just like yesterday, I didn't hear most of your question. I don't know about your mic.
Oh, my goodness, man. This is driving me absolutely
nuts. That's very entertaining
right
to me.
I'm sorry about that, D.
No, it's okay. So if I had to answer your question, I would answer this one. You said
Oh my goodness, that was good. And you call me over the top?
Yeah. That was good. Chevy Chase spies like us. He asked about season ticket sales. Is it rough right now because of this?
Yep. Yeah, you know, so season ticket sales were actually they're fine. You know, we have a lot of fans out there who want to buy season tickets and get back into the normal swing, but we've got to make sure that we take care of those current season ticket holders first. And that's a big part of this. You're exactly right, Wolf. It's not just putting up, a percentage of your tickets for sale for single game. You first have to place your season ticket holders who want to obviously take advantage of the opportunity to have seats this year, but they may not have the exact same seats. So we're trying to figure out where to relocate people so that they're in a nice location. And then what we have surrounding all of those, we'll put up for sale. But there's been really good demand, and especially from the current season ticket holders. They're very supportive. They were very patient last year. They've been working with us. They just want to get back to Chase Field, and that's so obvious, and it's ringing true also with spring.
Why, despite the quietest offseason Mike Hazen's ever had, why are you confident this team will compete?
Well, I think we'll be prepared. You know, being out there and watching the guys, it is all business, which is nice to see. And they look healthy. They look motivated. I mean, seeing obviously it's live BP and it's not in a game, but to see Luke Weaver look so crisp yesterday and Zach Gallen, you know, no surprise. But these guys are really focused. Again, I go back to how aggressive we were the last couple of off seasons and trying to fill our holes with a team that we thought was going to be extremely competitive. And for reasons we've mentioned before, we didn't have a lot of success last year. We still have a lot of confidence in this roster, and there were not a lot of holes to fill. Now we'll see. Maybe we thought too highly of the roster that we put together for 19 and 20. They certainly performed well in 19, and at times last year they performed very well. But in addition to that, Doug, to answer your question as well, the young players that we got to see last year, it was refreshing to see them in an elevated role and to perform. And so I know that they're going to play an important part this year, and we have the confidence in those guys having a role as well on this roster.
D, there are four or five big-time players that you have on the roster that really need to have bounce-back years. If you had to pick one guy to have that bounce-back year that you absolutely had to have it out of them, whom would it be?
Well, I think our guys would all tell you they need to bounce back. I mean, some had, you know, tremendous seasons, obviously, but I think for us to see Madison pitch the way that we expect him to pitch, and he feels good, he looks good, he's used to a normal preparation of an off season. I think Escobar came in now and in wonderful shape, and we should see him back in 2019 form. I think there's so many different cases where guys will say, I've got to perform better. We did have some great seasons out of guys like Christian Walker and out of Ketel Marte and LeCastro. And I think Carson Kelly's another one who will tell you he wants to bounce back. And watching him yesterday and seeing the shape that he's in, I think really, Wolf, if you go all around the field and if you look up and down that pitching staff, they're all going to say they need to do a better job, and especially the pitchers, because that was our weakness last year, was not throwing strikes, putting too many guys on base. And our strength is going to be our pitching. You know, we've again invested in a bullpen to help bolster that pitching staff, because we do like our 5, 6, 7 possible starters. And I think if everybody has the type of season we expect them to have, and looking at track records, those seasons that they've had in the past, if they can repeat that and get back to that level, they'll all tell you they need to. And I think we're used to consistency out of guys like Cattell and out of Escobar. And I'm excited about all these guys wanting to bounce back collectively, if that makes sense.
Talking to team president and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, this is Derek Hall. D-Hall, there were some horrible comments made by the Mariners president, and the ones that are kind of off the deep end, that's kind of for our news station to talk about, but the ones that were just directly baseball related, he openly admitted that the Mariners were engaging in service time manipulation to keep guys away from free agency. And I understand it's a business. You as owners and management, you have the right to do that. And in some cases, it's a good baseball decision. But it hurts the product for the fans when you're keeping guys that are good enough to be here down in the minors. Do you guys do that as the Diamondbacks? Do you think it's fair? Should it be changed? How do you put the best product on the field while still, you know, basically using the advantages you have as management?
You said it right, Doug, and you presented it perfectly. And for a team like us, you know, we can't wait to get our guys ready to come to the big leagues. And you look at last year, we brought all these guys up, you know. So for us, we get excited to develop these guys and have them start their big league careers. And we look for the best team possible. And if that includes bringing guys up that are ready, that have been knocking on the door, you've got to do it. And, you know, for our fans, we owe it to them. They deserve to have the best team out there possibly, you know, at all times. And so that includes young guys, whether they have service time or not, whether they're, you know, about to cross that line. It's important for us to make sure we have the best roster possible at all times and try and win each and every game.
I hope I never hear cashless and contactless and safety pods ever again, but something tells me they might be here for a while. D,
hey, play ball,
what,
baby.
What were you going to say?
I agree with you. No, I do. I think it is going to be a way of living for at least a while. But you're right. I mean, it is. It seems like the 3 or 4 interviews we've had over the last couple of months together, I've talked about cashless, contactless, and pods, and I'm so tired of it as well. I can't wait till people are arm in arm and where people are walking in front of you on the way back to their seats and you can't see and you're yelling at them. So, man, you know, let's get back to that, Wolf.
God bless you and the family, bro. Thank you so much,
absolutely,
dude. Appreciate
thank
you.
Get that mic fixed.
That's well done. Well done. That's Derek Hall, President, CEO, Arizona Diamondbacks, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. If you're in the market for a new or pre-owned Nissan, go to coulternissan.com, west of the hassle. Coming up next, Roger Goodell is actually doing something that the players really want. And I don't know if all the GMs and owners are ready for it.
Safety pods.
That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
If I had to answer your question, I would answer this one. You said I would reek it.
Diamondbacks president and CEO Derek Hall on the Doug and Wolf Show. Presented by Cox Business. Cox Business Internet keeps you connected with 99.9% reliability. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.